Welcome to the Anxiety Summit Season 2. I'm your host, Trudy Scott. I'm a food mood expert, certified nutritionist, and author of the Anti-Anxiety Food Solution. And today's topic is sugar impact diet. And you've guessed it. We're going to be talking about the impact of sugar with JJ Virgin. Welcome, JJ.
Thank you, Trudy. Great to be here.
It's really great to have you here. Let me read your bio, and then I'm just going to share a little bit about the background and why I wanted you on this anxiety summit. So JJ is a celebrity nutrition and fitness expert, and she helps clients lose weight fast by breaking free from food intolerances and crushing their sugar cravings. She is the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Virgin Diet, Drop 7 Foods, Lose 7 Pounds, Just 7 Days, and The Virgin Diet Cookbook, 150 Easy and Delicious Recipes to Lose Weight and Feel Better Fast. And coming November the 4th, The Sugar Impact Diet, Drop 7 Hidden Sugars, Lose Up to 10 Pounds, Just 2 Weeks. JJ is also a frequent blogger at Huffington Post, Mind Body Green, and other outlets, as well as a popular guest on TV, radio, and in magazines. You can learn more at jjvirgin.com. Now, we are pre-recording this because when this airs, JJ will be super busy with her book launch. This interview airs November the 4th, which is launch day of Sugar Impact Diet. So I'm going to say a big congrats now, JJ, because I know when this airs, it's a bit weird doing it like this, but I know when this airs, it's going to be flying off the shelves and into shopping carts, and I'm fortunate to have received a sneak preview of the book, which is wonderful. So I'm just really thrilled to be interviewing you, you know, for so many reasons. Firstly, because your new book is just so fabulous, and secondly, because this is such an important topic when it comes to anxiety and depression and any mood issues like irritability or feeling overwhelmed, mood swings, as well as weight loss and energy, which I know is your focus. And we know, you know, sugar has a big impact in diabetes. We know it plays a role in heart disease. And there are just so many connections that we see. There's this big connection between heart disease and anxiety. You know, we see this increased risk of heart disease and stroke when we're anxious and stressed. And we know that sugar increases inflammation, and I know we're going to talk about that today. And we see this very obvious link between inflammation and heart disease, and even inflammation and anxiety and depression. Of course, it's just really great to interview you as someone I look up to in the world of nutrition. JJ and I serve together on the board of the NANP, the National Association of Nutrition Professionals. When she was president, I was vice president, and then I took over as president when JJ stepped down. And that just seemed like such a long time ago, JJ.
I know, doesn't it?
It really does. And here you are today, a leader in the field and taking this nutrition world by storm with your Virgin Diet books and programs and sharing the importance of looking at the 7 common food intolerances, with sugar being one of them. The others are corn, eggs, peanuts, dairy, gluten, soy, all of which could potentially impact your mood. But today, we're looking at the sugar impact, which does include artificial sweeteners and some other factors that I know you're going to be sharing us with today. So I know your work and your books and your programs are focused on weight loss and energy crashes, which are, you know, is obviously so important. And a lot of the people listening to this are going to really resonate with that. But this information today is equally important if you don't have weight issues and you've just got anxiety issues and mood issues. So let's start right away with what is the role that stress and anxiety plays in sugar addiction?
Well, it's interesting, too. I've got to tell you this, Trudy. You know, people come in for, whether it's the Virgin Diet or Sugar Impact Diet, they come in to lose weight, but they stay because a lot of people have no idea that they're just, you know, that the depression and the moodiness and the anxiety can actually be fixed so easily, right? So, you know, that's what I like to say is it makes the massive difference. And let's face it, with sugar, when I had to look at sugar, so here's the deal. The Virgin Diet, number one question by far was about sugar. People were either confused, like, can I have artificial sweeteners or not, or what about agave, or they were controlled by it and consumed with cravings, and they just couldn't put the cookie down, right? So that's when I decided I better take the whole book to this topic. It was that big. And so I started to look at, well, know, what are all of the different reasons that we have issues with sugar? And, oh, my gosh, stress, of course, is one of the biggest issues for sugar because, as we know, when you're under stress, first of all, your blood sugar goes crazy. So when you're under stress, it's one of the things I'll see with people is their blood sugar starts riding up, so they'll have elevated blood sugar. You lower your serotonin, so you start craving more sugar too. And, of course, your digestion goes off. Your gut becomes more permeable, so you start having issues, if you didn't before, with gluten and dairy. And, of course, then you're not sleeping as well. And if you're not sleeping as well, you're going to have elevated ghrelin and more insulin resistance and more leptin resistance, so now you're hungrier. So it's like when you look at what stress does, stress makes you crave more sugar, hungrier overall, and then tired, so you don't want to, you know, so you want things that are quick, energetic pick-me-ups, and unstable blood sugar. It's like this trifecta of bad for setting you up for going after sugar.
Great. And then when we're feeling like this, we self-medicate with sugar. So you talk about sugar being a drug. Can you tell us what you mean by that?
Well, so not only is sugar a drug, sugar is the number one drug of choice. It is the number one drug of choice at every age worldwide. You know, I just read something, Trudy, that so horrified me. It made me so angry. I mean, the more I look into sugar, the angrier I get at the misinformation out there because you've got people trying so hard, thinking they're doing everything right, and they are buying things that say no sugar added that have got fruit juice purees and fruit juice concentrates in them, which are worse. And then, you know, you've got the American Pediatric Association that just did their recommendations for kids and with juice, okay? And I'm reading this and I'm going, are we, you know, how insane have we gotten here when their recommendation for juice is that a child 7 or older should have no more than 12 ounces a day. So it said, here's the thing the American Pediatrics Association says. American Academy of Pediatrics recommends 1 to 6 years, maximum of 6 ounces of juice a day. And they say some juice is okay for most children as long as it's 100% fruit juice. Then they say 7 years of or older, a maximum of 12 ounces a day of juice. That's 37 grams of sugar, 37 grams of sugar. No wonder the average kid now is getting 32 grams of sugar in. It's insane.
That is
right?
Crazy. That's crazy.
Isn't it? I mean, I'm sorry, not 32 grams. The average kid is eating 32 teaspoons of sugar, 32 teaspoons of sugar a day. I mean, It is insane what is going on with sugar. It just makes me crazy. So when you look at it, if this was any other thing, we would be, you know, treating it like it was alcohol or cocaine or any of these other things. When you look at it, it's as addictive as cocaine. It's more addictive than morphine. Connecticut College did a study where they looked at morphine and Oreos with rats, and they both lit up the brain, same pleasure centers, reward centers in the brain. The only difference was when the rats were given the choice between morphine and Oreos, they picked the Oreos because they were more pleasurable. Crazy. I know. And maybe it's because with the Oreos, you got a little trifecta, because when you look at it, what's the worst thing? So sugar lights up the reward center, and then you've got gluten and dairy. Opiates, but you know, casomorphines and glutamorphine. So just an opiate load to you when you look at something like cereal and milk, right? With all the sugar, gluten, and dairy. So clearly you've got a drug, and the more of it you eat, the more of it you want. I'll never forget, I got a call from school when my kids were in elementary school, and one of my kids, and it was the older one, he was maybe 9 at the time, and I get a call, come pick up your child. I'm like, why? What's going on? He's climbing the walls. Well, turns out they'd given him this prize of M&Ms. He'd won some, like, wrapping paper sale prize, so they gave him a pound bag of M&Ms. I'm like, what is wrong with you? Seriously? My kid's climbing the walls. He doesn't eat this kind of stuff. You gave him a pound bag of M&Ms, and
wow,
you can keep him, as far as I'm concerned. You know, congratulations, you win him until this wears off. Right?
It's crazy what they do in schools and how they're rewarding
kids
with these treats, these sugary treats. And then they wonder why they you know, climbing up the walls and doing all sorts of crazy things.
I know. Why do they have ADD? I don't know. Could it be the juice? because that apple juice is worse than the Coke. It's got all those horrible, you know, it's higher in fructose than the Coke is, so possibly.
So I'm glad you brought up the juice again, because I wanted to go back to what you said about the American Pediatric Association, and you talked about juice, and a lot of people think juice is okay, but it's not. Can you tell us why?
I know. Why does juice have this big fat halo around it, as if it's something good? Well, it's fruit. It's like, here's, first of all, fruit is not free food. You know, why we created the USDA MyPlate to say 5 servings of fruits and vegetables as if kale equaled apple juice,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, this is ridiculous. There's a big difference between starchy and non-starchy vegetables and fruit and vegetables. As I was talking to our buddy Jonathan Baylor, he goes, just think of vegetables as sugared, or fruit as sugared up vegetables. I go, that's a great way to put it. So a little fruit has got fiber, it's got nutrients. So, you know, 1 to 2 pieces of lower sugar, low sugar impact fruit a day, great. But to then unwrap it, squeeze it, get rid of the fiber, intensify the sugar part of it, and have 12 ounces. I'm like going, 12 ounces of apple juice? What is that, like 4 apples? I mean, how many apples did it take to make 12 ounces of apple juice? You know, and you got none of the fiber to slow down that sugar impact. So this idea of juice, even green drinks. Now, there's the heinous green drinks. So a lot of these green drinks out there, I'm going to do a shout-out on Green Machine, because if you go by the Green Machine, it says no sugar added on the front. And then if you look at the back of this product, it is fruit purees, fruit juice concentrates, and then there's a little bit of these greens. But it's mainly fruit juice, 56 grams of sugar in 16 ounces. That's just crazy. Right? But if you look at even straight green drinks, they don't have the fiber anymore. They're still going to elevate blood sugar. So to me, the only thing that makes sense is to throw a whole piece of fruit in to make a smoothie and get everything still left in there, all the fiber, everything else. Don't unwrap the fruit, take out the fiber, and then just keep the sugar. That doesn't make any sense.
I love
right?
it. I love that term, unwrap the fruit. That's just brilliant, because that's what we're doing. And
that's what we're doing. I heard Daniel Amen, our buddy Dr. Daniel Amen, say that, and I'm like, that's so good. So I grabbed that from him.
That's good. Well, whoever says it, we like it. And, you know, it's so important that you mention this no sugar added, because we'll see this all over the place, no sugar added. And that just means there's no white sugar added, or maybe there's no high fructose corn syrup added. But we've got all this fruit juice added. We've got this fruit puree added, which is not a good thing. So I'm glad
which
you mentioned
that. Which is still sugar.
Yeah.
You know, even though, you know, I say all sugar is not created equal, and I created a whole new way of looking at sugar, as you know, the bottom line is that fruit juice concentrate, that's sugar. That's what you're getting. You're getting sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that they can say no sugar added is just ridiculous. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Right. Now, I want to talk about what sugar is doing to our health, but you just said not all sugar is created equal. Do we need to go into that a little bit more?
And we'll come back we do to at some point. We'll definitely have to. I know. I just waved that out there. Well, what I was looking at, and you know, I just never understood why we were using the glycemic index as a rating scale. It's sort of like stepping on a scale and using that as the only way to determine how healthy you are, or looking at total cholesterol as a marker of health. We know with total cholesterol you need to be looking at fractions of LDLs, their particle sizes, and HDLs. We know with weight you've got to look at how much is your weight is body fat, how much is, you know, lean tissue, muscle mass, et cetera. And we know with sugar that if we're just looking at glycemic index, we're getting a very small picture, because it's not taking into account how much of something we're eating. So it makes the potato look like a carrot. And it's also not taking into account the fructose. And when you get down to it, sugar's got two fates. All the different types of sugar, whether it's milk sugar or sugar from grain. So all the different places we're getting sugar, they're going to go one of two places. They're either going to end up becoming glucose, or they're going to end up becoming fructose. And the difference there is huge. Glucose still isn't a free food, but if I had to choose between glucose or fructose, I'm picking glucose every day of the week, because glucose goes and raises blood sugar, and then it raises insulin and triggers leptin and triggers ghrelin. So it tells your body you ate. Now, too much glucose, ideally glucose gets stored in the muscles as energy, so you have energy there when you need to go do something later, something quick, hard, athletic. if you eat too much of it, you can only store so much, and so it's going to get stored as fat if you have too much of it, and you'll keep insulin elevated, which is one of the ways that sugar creates inflammation and raises stress hormones. But fructose has a totally different fate. We used to think fructose was great and it read low on the glycemic index because it doesn't raise blood sugar. We're like, cool, it doesn't raise blood sugar, so agave must be great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the thing is, it doesn't raise blood sugar, so it doesn't trigger any of the satiety signals. It goes straight to the liver, and it could turn into glucose and get stored as glycogen, stored energy there, but it's the liver. That's a tiny little place. There's not a whole lot of space there. So most likely it's filled up. And once it is, it goes straight into making fat. So generally when you're eating fructose, you're making fat, you're still hungry, and it does something called glycation, which is this very aging process, more than glucose does. So it's aging you faster, it's making you fat, and making you still hungry. And the more fructose you eat, the better you get at doing that. And the more fructose you eat, the more sweet you want, because fructose is sweeter than glucose. And the more sweet you eat, the more sweet you want. So you just get into this really bad downward spiral.
Wow, that's really important.
That was my rant.
No, that was good. It's important to know that differentiation. Can you give us some examples of where we would find fructose other than agave?
You know, the biggest agave is really the big telltale one that I always like to shout out, because people, for some reason, it got this halo effect that agave was great and started being put into all these healthy foods. Honey's got fructose, but agave actually is like the highest source of it, unless you're getting straight crystalline fructose, which you still see in some of these healthy shakes. There's actually a blood sugar control shake out there made by a professional ran company that has fructose as a sweetener. And I looked at that and I'm like, I cannot believe this. Like 15 grams of it. Horrible. 16 grams, actually. The same amount of sugar as in an ice cream cone. Like crazy stuff, right? But other than that, you're going to get it in fruit. Now, remember, fruit is not straight fructose. It's fructose and glucose. But it is the biggest source of fructose out there. And the biggest source of fructose in fruits are apples and pears. And that's why I go on a rampage about apple juice, because apple juice is the highest fructose juice you're going to get. It's higher in fructose than a Coke is. Now, you don't get the caramel coloring that you get in a Coke, which, as we know, glycates just like sugars do. But still, you know, you're still getting a ton of fructose, and we don't want to do that. So I'm not saying no fruit. I'm saying choose your fruit wisely. Make sure it's whole fruit. It's not dried fruit, fruit purees, fruit concentrates, fruit juice. And limit it to one or two a day. Fruit is not a free food to be snacked on all throughout the day. I don't know where that came from. That's crazy, crazy.
I'm glad you say that, because a lot of people think, well, I'm being healthy. I'm just, you know, I'm not having any added sugar. I'm not having any candies. I'm not having cookies. But I'm going to eat a lot of fruit because that's healthy. And I think there are problems when you eat too much, as you're sharing with us. And I think it's important to be aware of, and certainly with me reading your book, that was just a little bit of an eye-opener for me. I thought, I need to emphasize that a little bit more with my clients, because I think it's easy to think it's a free ride, and it's not.
Yeah, it really seems like it should be a free ride. I mean, come on, they're fruit. It's natural. But I actually, in my sugar program, and one of the things that I do in the program is I don't have people go to a cold turkey. I think that is one of the biggest reasons people fail when they try to get sugar out of their diet, is they don't understand all the places it's sneaking in. So they may think they're getting sugar out, and they're doing things like, you know, drinking something that says no sugar added, that's got fruit juice concentrates in it, or that strawberry yogurt that's got 26 grams of sweetener, or one of these things in it. But now I forgot my train of thought there. But, I have people for 2 weeks actually take all the fruit out of their diet and go total low fructose, because it turns out the more fructose you eat, the better your body gets at handling it, which is not something we want to be good at. It's like, would you want to be good at making fat? I don't want to be good at that, you know. I want my body to really be bad at making fat. I want my body to be good at burning fat. And that's so important, because if you're really good at burning fat for fuel, you have nice, steady sustained energy. You know, if you're a sugar burner where you have to eat every couple hours, you have to do the snacking, you shouldn't have to snack. If you have to snack in order to keep your blood sugar stable, you've turned yourself into a sugar burner. And that's so directly tied to mood, Trudy, when you look at it. Because if your blood sugar goes down, you're going to be irritable. You're not going to be able to focus. You'll get cranky. One of my sons, my older son, was on a medication at one point that made his blood sugar unstable. And we would get calls from school, and I'm like, oh, his blood sugar went down again. You know, it's like we've got to get him off that med. I mean, it was terrible. So keeping your blood sugar stable, which you shouldn't be doing by eating every 2 or 3 hours. You should be doing it by eating correctly every 4 to 6 hours and keeping your insulin low so your body can access stored fat for fuel, is such a key to having a good, healthy mood. And it can take a while to get there, as we know. You know, if you've got hypoglycemia, if you are insulin resistant or diabetic, or you've got adrenal gland exhaustion, it may take a little bit to get into being able to eat, go longer in between meals, but you can get there.
Okay, good, because I was going to actually ask you that, because some of my clients who have the really low blood sugar and they get really anxious if they do skip the meals, the snacking, and they need to have breakfast and eat protein at every meal and healthy fats, but if they're skipping those snacks, they will feel very anxious. So would you say that healing your adrenals with the aim of not needing to snack down the road?
Yeah, so, I mean, like, there's no reason to make people white-knuckle things and set them up to fail. You are going to be anxious on this program. No, you know, as you just mentioned, having protein at each meal, having some healthy fats, and having a load of fiber is really the key to being able to go longer and longer in between meals and snacks. And I think when you do that, like, let's say someone's used to eating every 2 hours. The first thing that I have them do is get clean, lean protein, healthy fats, slow, low-impact carbs that are high fiber into that meal. Then you journal it, and you get good water intake in between the meals, because quite often they're just not drinking enough, and you try to go from 2 to 2.5 hours. Then you go from 2.5 hours to 3 hours, and you just stretch it. And, you know, because a lot of times we're hypoglycemic purely because we haven't been eating. If you look back at the meal you just ate, you missed something. You didn't get your slow, low-impact carbs. You didn't get enough healthy fats, you know, and that's what made you crash.
Great. Give us some examples of some slow, low carbs.
Slow, low carbs are things like quinoa and wild rice and lentils and legumes. Now, I like to say the sugar impact diet's agnostic, just like the Virgin Diet was. So whether you're paleo or vegan, I embrace everybody. So I actually developed this so, you know, paleo, that could be things like squash, pumpkin, butternut. And then for vegans, again, lentils and quinoa and wild rice. So simple things that are very, very low sugar, very high fiber, or easy, slow, low carbs for people to have. And squash, I got to tell you, I am like a big pumpkin, kabocha squash. These are some of the most amazing foods out there for helping with blood sugar control and great nutrient density that we just don't eat enough of.
Great. I love it. Oh, I feel hungry just listening to you. And then let's talk about some of the lean protein sources that you like to recommend if someone is eating a paleo diet, for example.
Okay, so not a vegan. You know, I have everybody start the day with a high-quality protein shake. I don't do dairy. I don't do whey or casein or soy for sure. So I use a defatted beef protein. And then for clean, lean protein sources, grass-fed beef, wild and sustainable seafood, especially salmon and halibut and scallops and sardines, those bigger Mediterranean-style sardines, not the scary ones, but I just can't make myself eat. They're just frightening me. And lamb. I'll tell you, the toughest food to get really healthy, and, you know, I order mine specially. I think I'm getting them right now, Mary's Chickens and Rosie's Chickens, Pittman Farms. Getting pastured chickens, because that tends to be one of the harder foods to get healthy, and pastured pork. So it's really where you want to spend your money, and it's interesting. there's a big urban legend that it costs more to eat healthy. And I have now proven this multiple times at the store that it costs less to eat healthy. I don't know where that got started, but these processed foods are enormously expensive, especially for the fact that you're really not getting any nutrition from them. You know, it's like I bought all this stuff to show how to do lateral shifts. I show how to swap high sugar impact foods for low sugar impact. And I'm looking at all this high sugar impact food going, God, it was so expensive. And there really is like, there's like nothing in here good for you. But where you do want to spend your money is on high-quality protein. But I actually have a freezer that I bought specially for this, and I order mine direct from a company that saves me a ton of money. So that's how I do it, and it's great. We always have lamb and chicken and grass-fed beef and wild fish in the freezer, and we just pull something out every day and make it.
Great. Love it. And I'm pleased you mentioned the pastured chickens. And, of course, eggs would fit into that unless eggs were a food intolerance. So that would be another good source. And then that's quite, what do you mean? I'd love to know what you're talking about the sardines, because I'm a big sardine eater. I love any sardines. So are there other ones?
So you're so good. You're advanced. I wish I was. I bow to you. I'm. You know, it's so funny. In my cookbook, I did the bigger, you know, the bigger sardines that you can get that are better different than the little baby ones in the can. I'm just afraid of them. I will admit, I have never had the little sardines in the can because they seem so scary to me that I haven't had them. So I've had the big sardines that you can order out at a restaurant, and we actually have a grilled version of Mediterranean sardines in the book, but in the Virgin Diet cookbook. But those little ones, man, if you can eat sardines, hats off to you, eat them multiple times a week. They are great for you, and one day I'm going to get over it myself.
Yes, I challenge you. I was actually speaking at the Integrative Medicine for Mental Health conference this last weekend, and there wasn't a lot of healthy food to be had, and I stopped at Whole Foods on the way and bought four little cans of sardines, and I ate sardines all weekend. And it was
great. Isn't that great? It's
really
like, then you know you're taken care of. I will travel with, I have some great canned salmon from Vital Choice, so I've got that.
Beautiful.
And I travel, of course, with my Nutribullet. I just upgraded to the big, big Nutribullet, you know, because I keep blowing out the magic bullets. But I travel with shakes, and I travel with bars, and I travel with all sorts of stuff because, yeah, you never know where you're going to end up and with nothing to eat. And when you're used to eating really well, and people will say, you know, it goes along that thing of, do you cheat? It's like, once you know what it feels good, what it feels like to eat correctly, and in the sugar impact diet, I actually have you go through, you taper down, and then you do this 2 weeks where you're transitioning from being a sugar burner to a fat burner, and you get fructose down low, and then you go into this transformed period where you actually test back higher sugar impact foods to see how you feel. And, you know, when you connect the dots and you go, wow, this food took my energy away, or now I can't focus, or I have a headache, or my blood sugar feels off, you just don't want it anymore. It's like, you know, it's the costs are too high. That's why these ideas of cheat days are ridiculous. You would never take an alcoholic to a bar and give them a cheat day. You know, if you think of food as a drug, how could you have a cheat day?
Right.
It doesn't make any sense.
Right. Yes, that's absolutely right. And I'm glad that you talk about doing a taper, because that is such an easy way for you to assess how it's affecting you. Make a change, log it, see how you feel, and then add something back in and see how it makes you feel. That is just so powerful to actually feel that impact yourself.
It is so important to connect the dots between what you're eating and how you feel. It changes everything. It's just because then it's not like, oh, I have just a little bit of this. If you knew a little bit of something was going to make you gassy or bloated, or you were going to have to go take a nap, or it was going to give you a headache, or it was going to start you back on that, it's a trigger of all of a sudden you have that, now you want another cookie or another, you know, it's like, you know how that is. It's like you have a little bit of it and you're like, oh, I want more of this, right? It starts that whole addictive cycle. Who wants that?
Right. So I want to go on and talk about artificial sweeteners and some of the signs of the high sugar impact, but I said we would come back and talk about what sugar is doing to our health. So I don't want to forget that one, because I know everyone's wondering, you know, what does it actually do to our health? So can we talk a little bit about that, and then we'll go into some more facts about where we can find some of these sugars and what we've got to do and what your program does and how we can stop the cravings and everything else.
Okay, wait, now you lost me. So you just want to know sugar and health?
how sugar impacts our health. What is it doing?
Oh, my gosh. You know, it's interesting because when you look at sugar, it plays a role in, like, every single major disease. I mean, obviously diabetes and prediabetes, but also dementia and osteoarthritis and fatty liver and cancer and heart disease and obesity. And so if you look at just these, the study after study after study on this, and I kind of look and I go, well, do you really need to have a study showing that, like, sugar causes obesity, you know? But if you look at just the sugar and obesity, they looked at how the biggest difference in what's happened to us over the last couple decades is this increase in high fructose corn syrup. You know, fat came down out of the food, sugar came up in the food, and obesity exploded. So that's been an incredible one. Then there was this, there's been studies showing that they see a significant relationship between added sugar consumption and increased risk for heart, not heart disease, for death, from heart disease. And one study showed that 3 fizzy drinks per day. So when you drank 25%, when you ate 25% or more of your calories from sugar, you had a 3-fold risk of heart disease. 25% of your calories or more. That's just crazy. In cancer, it's interesting because, you know, when you look at cancer, sugar raises insulin. Insulin drives tumor growth. When they look at how to evaluate cancer, one of the ways they do it is they use a PET scan and they have you use glucose because the cancer cells suck up the glucose. And they're looking at sugars and different types of cancers, and they've, you know, found links with things like pancreatic cancer. But now they're starting to look at fructose specifically, and they're finding out that fructose is actually might even be more problematic because it tends to promote more aggressive cancers. Fatty liver is a crazy one, and that's, again, because of the fructose. That's how they've linked it. Where we used to have fatty liver was a disease of alcoholics, now we've got the non-alcoholic fatty liver disease because now we're seeing it in kids. Same with diabetes in kids. That's crazy. 29 million diabetics now. 8 million are walking around. They don't know it. And 86 million are pre-diabetic. And what Lustig, Dr. Lustig, found was that the cause of type 2 diabetes wasn't tied to the amount of calories that you eat. He said, yeah, when the study that he's talking about showed that when people ate more calories, the rate of diabetes went up. But when they added the same number of calories and got them from added sugars like high fructose corn syrup and sucrose, the rate went up a lot more. So it was much more related to where the calories were coming from and the fact that they were coming from sugar. And then a study in the New England Journal of Medicine looked at average blood sugar levels of 2,000 people, older people over 5 years, and it showed that even if you don't have diabetes, if you have higher blood sugar levels, you have an increased risk of dementia. And of course, we also know that if you're diabetic, you have a double risk of Alzheimer's. So if you look at all of these different things, it's just, you know, sugar plays a role in all of them, and it probably is because, you know, as we know, sugar drives inflammation. You know, sugar drives insulin, sugar drives cortisol, sugar drives inflammation. Inflammation is always at the root of all of these different diseases as well. So it's kind of like, what doesn't it play a role in? You know, you look at all of this. And I don't want to let artificial sweeteners off the hook either, because I actually think artificial sweeteners are worse than sugar if you had to get down to it. So a lot of these studies are starting to show the same thing that, you know, sugar is doing, artificial sweeteners are doing, and maybe even more so. So there's that piece too. And one that I didn't talk about as a disease, but it's really, I think, the most significant thing that sugar is doing is sugar is impacting our gut microbiome. And if you look at it, so we have 100 trillion cells there, bacteria, and 100 times the DNA in these cells than we have in our own cells that are absolutely modifiable by diet and drugs. And now we're feeding them sugar, and we're feeding the bad bacterial population in the gut. And we know artificial sweeteners do this same thing, and in fact, possibly even worse. And so a lot of what I think we're going to find is driving disease is actually what's happening in our gut microbiome. I think that'll be the next big thing. It's like, you know, that study that just came out that showed that artificial sweeteners in 7 days, actually the study was 6 days, made people glucose intolerant. People who were drinking artificially sweetened drinks became glucose intolerant in 6 days through their gut microbiome became glucose intolerant. It was the shift in the gut microbiome that did this. So I think we're going to start to see that a lot of this actually could be happening from what's happening in our gut. We already know that if you have more gut bacteria, bad gut bacteria, you extract more calories from the food you eat and store it as fat. So it can raise your risk of obesity. Now it shows that it might be the way that we are able to handle our glucose tolerance, which then could lead to diabetes. So we know that immune system is dictated there. Our serotonin is, majority of our serotonin is being produced there. So a lot of stuff in the gut microbiome that probably is being driven by sugar too.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm so glad you mentioned the serotonin, because we're now seeing a lot of research with showing this connection between inflammation and anxiety and depression, because what happens is the cytokines activates this IDO enzyme, which degrades the tryptophan, which leads to less serotonin and less melatonin and more anxiety and depression, and then worse sleep problems, and because of that, more sugar craving. So we just get this vicious cycle going on. And the whole gut microbiome is so important too. I'm just so glad that you mentioned the research on how sugar impacts us, because not a lot of people are talking about it. And there's this great new field called psychobiotics. There's the Irish researcher, Dr. Timothy Dynan, I think he's termed the coin psychobiotics, and how important the microbiome is when it comes to overall health and mood and anxiety. And it's such an important topic. And sugar plays a role in all of these. Very, very powerful.
I know, and we just don't, it's hard to think of those things because you don't see them, you know? But I think what you just have to realize is when you eat sugar, it starts a bad cycle that becomes so hard to get off of, because you eat it, you raise stress hormones, you raise insulin, you start creating inflammation, your serotonin goes down, you don't sleep well, you're hungrier, you know, you're tired, you crave more sweet, you eat more sweet, that's going to impact, you know, your insulin and your, and it's like just starts this whole thing while it's feeding the bad bacteria in your gut and it's keeping your cravings up and triggering your reward center. I mean, it just gets crazy.
Yep, so. Very, very bad. So tell us, where do sugars hide the most? When I read your book, I heard some pretty surprising places that I think folks need to know about.
Oh, I know. You know, and that's what's so interesting, and one of the big takeaways is that for so many of us, and I'm sure a lot of people listening, is that they go, well, I'm not eating much sugar. I'm already eating healthy, right? I mean, and honestly, that was me too. And so as I was going through this, when I pulled out, I started looking at fructose levels of all these different things, which was not easy to find, and glycemic load. And then really, like, nutrient density of foods and fiber. And all of a sudden I'm going, wow, there are things that I really thought were okay here that I didn't realize had the, you know, had the high sugar impact that they do. And, I mean, I think the places that we're getting the most trouble are sauces and dressings. You know, you just don't think about that raspberry vinaigrette or the balsamic vinaigrette. I mean, balsamic vinegar is syrup. So, and it's funny because I've never really liked balsamic vinegar, but, you know, it was always the thing to have at a restaurant, so I'd have it, but I didn't know why I didn't like it, and I didn't realize it's because it's syrup. It's really not a vinegar like the other vinegars. So any of these types of things that we're having out at dinner where you're having maybe the glazed salmon, which just is code for sugar, you know, we just, you know, it's like you look at it and you go, well, glazed donut, glazed salmon, same thing. Some of these coatings that they put on things that you just don't think about, you know, the obvious, but you don't realize how much sugar you're actually getting in these things that, you know, and it all adds up. So the balsamic vinaigrette and the raspberry vinaigrette and that barbecue sauce, and maybe the, I had a steak. There's a place I always go because they have grass-fed beef, but I didn't know that they put this herb blend on top of it that actually has wheat flour in it. I'm like, why would you do that? You know? And then a lot of these, you know, I like to go to Thai restaurants. A lot of sugar in Thai food, unfortunately. Darn it. And it's funny, when you don't have these things and then you go have them, you realize how super sweet they really are. It's crazy. So.
And then you, one other one that I read was dried tomatoes.
Well, sun-dried tomatoes, and that was another one that I kept putting on things. But if you think about it, you know, tomatoes are a fruit. Mm-hmm. Dried fruit is condensed sugar, and sun-dried tomatoes are just, now, I think I put them as a medium sugar impact. But still, you know, I used to throw a ton of sun-dried tomatoes into sauces. I was like, yum, you know. I was like, no, JJ, don't do it. You know, and even things like steak sauce, you would never think steak sauce. And some of these curry sauces, they're just, it's a lot of the, you know, the sauce that you wouldn't think of, tomato paste, a lot of the marinara sauces, you know, obviously pickles, pickle relishes. So you just have to look at the labels. You'll be shocked at some of these things. Coconut water, 12 grams of sugar in coconut water, the unsweetened coconut water that everyone thinks so great. Vitamin water, 31 grams of sugar in most of the vitamin waters out there. So, again, there's just... it's just crazy when you start to look at them, all the places it's sneaking in, and a lot of these things are things that we consider to be healthy choices.
Right. And if you're buying a vitamin water and it says 0 grams of sugar, then you need to read
then
the label.
Yeah.
Even more closely, because you're going to get that artificial
treatment.
It's
even worse. It's even worse. And then a lot of these things, you know, just if you went to get a skinny latte, right? A skinny latte is a total problem, too, because you've got the skim milk that's got all the sugar in it. So, and most of these skinny, like the skinny-free, sugar-free vanilla lattes got artificial sweeteners in it. So, yeah, there's just so many of these things with so much stuff. Or the jams, those no-sugar-added jams. Oh,
terrible.
Just concentrated sugar. Yeah, but again, you know, you just don't think about it because you might have some oatmeal, maybe you put some raisins on it, and then you had like a, you know, skinny latte, and then you had a salad with maybe some dried fruit and a raspberry vinaigrette. You just keep going, and you know, you're just getting little bit. Then you had maybe some shrimp with some cocktail sauce, and before you know it, you're like, you know, you've gotten a ton of extra sugar in there, thinking you were doing well.
Really, really, really good. Now, you've got use a great analogy with ice cream cones. Won't you share that?
You know, I wanted to do that because no self-respecting person would get up in the morning, say, go to Starbucks and, you know, look at the ice cream store next door and say, forget it, I'm not going to get my coffee and my muffin. I'll just go get 3 ice cream cones. It's the same thing. And in reality, it's the same thing. You look at, like, cereal, milk, juice and a banana, 4 ice cream cones worth of sugar. But no one would ever think that. Or if you're in the line at Starbucks and you get a skinny latte and a muffin, that's probably 3 ice cream cones worth of sugar, at least 2.5. It's crazy. And the reason I say that is because we wouldn't eat that. We would never go like the green drink. I was, the green machine green drink with 56 grams of sugar. Well, that is almost 4 ice cream cones. So that's 3 and 3/4 ice cream cones. Let's even call it 3.5. But you just got that, you know, trying to be healthy.
Great. I love that. That's just, I think anytime someone's going to do something like this, they're going to think of ice creams. Brilliant.
I hope so, because if you went there and you said, okay, well, you know what, I'm just going to have that Jamba Juice thing here. And, I mean, oh, my gosh, some of those Jamba Juice drinks – there's one that has like, I don't know, 90 grams of sugar or something incredible in it. I'm looking at it going, how can these be? They're just insane. And if you did look at that in terms of an ice cream cone or those frappuccinos at Starbucks that most of us, it's, oh, it's just coffee, right?
Right. Definitely.
But for some reason, you think you get a hall pass. I think if we could look at all of it in terms of that, you would just never touch it. You wouldn't have that muffin. You wouldn't have the biscotti. You wouldn't have the strawberry yogurt. There is a strawberry yogurt out there with 26 grams of sugar per serving. Breyer's ice cream has, I think, 16 or 20 grams of sugar per serving. So the strawberry yogurt has more sugar than the serving of strawberry ice cream.
Yeah, and people are thinking it's good because it's low fat, but then they're loaded up with sugar. So that's
And that's an important thing to understand is, gosh, I mean, look at one of the most important things you can do for your brain. Eat the right fats. I say the right fats because making an oil change is one of the most critical things you can do. You know, and as we know, my son's here because we loaded him up with fish oil. But eating the right fat is critical. And whenever you pull the fat out, you can almost purely say that low fat or fat-free is going to go to high sugar, and high sugar means high fat. So no fat equals high sugar equals high fat, because that sugar is going to get turned to fat. So if you're going no fat, you're ending up with high fat, just the wrong type, right?
Right, definitely. And your son's doing really well with all the changes that you made. And as you say, getting those right fats, the fish oils and the healthy fats, has made a big difference for him. So it's
eats a lot of fish, a lot of grass-fed beef. And he is the one who went to the grocery store with me to find all the foods. We wanted to bring all this crap home and show all this bad food and how to throw it out and swap in some easier, low-sugar impact foods. And he's at the grocery store with me, and he is blown away. My son is a sugar sleuth. I mean, he is so anti-sugar. The barbecue sauces and the dressings and all this stuff. And he used to go and eat some of that stuff, and he will not touch it. I'm so happy.
That's
he
so
heard
great.
Me do the talks enough times now. He's like, okay. Like, good.
So great. So we talked a little bit about the sugar impact diet and how you have people take the high sugar impact foods out and then taper and then add things back in. What else can you share with me about the sugar impact diet, how it works and how it's different from other programs?
So, again, the number one question I got asked on the Virgin Diet was about sugar. And I didn't realize what a big deal this was. I mean, to write a whole book on this, right? And as I'm digging into this, I went and I bought every book out there. I'm looking at them. I mean, everything I could find on sugar. I didn't care how old it was, how I had to track this down. I got them all. And I noticed something really important in all these books. They either had no plan for how to get you off sugar. Like, so you buy a whole book that's telling you how bad sugar is. Like, we don't know this. I mean, I think everyone on the phone could agree sugar is bad, all right? That's, like, not a question. But you can't tell people sugar is bad and have no plan. Or if there was a plan, the plan was so brutal that no one was ever going to succeed, because you can't then say, okay, we're pulling it all out now, today, right?
Right.
Because that's just setting people up to fail. So the first thing that I did was create a whole new way of looking at how we look at sugar. Again, this whole idea of this glycemic index is just silly. So I created the sugar impact scales, and I rated fructose grams, glycemic load, how much of a certain food we're eating, so that people would understand that a carrot's not the same as a potato, and then nutrient density and fiber. And I rated foods low, medium, and high sugar impact. And I took two things. I did a sneaky sugar inventory that you just referred to, where all these different foods that are sneaking in, medium and high sugar impact foods, I have you take this inventory of what you're eating each week so you'll get a picture of it. Because, again, I thought I was doing really great, but there were still things sneaking in. And that's good, because that means that there's going to be things you can do to change. And then I also had people go through and do a sugar impact quiz. And this is just simple stuff that we don't think about, we think is normal, but it's really related to how much sugar impact is in your diet. So I looked at energy, sugar and carb cravings, overall appetite, mood and focus, gas and bloating, difficulty losing weight, and belly fat. And I have you rate them 1 to 5. Then, and that's so important, you know, you have to have the starting point. What you measure, you can improve. I take a week or two, depending on your scores there, and that's where we taper. And this is really important. There's no going cold turkey. We start eating by the sugar impact plate that you talked about, where you get protein and healthy fats and low impact carbs, so that you're really dialing in. You know, so often I think we crave sugar or we crave carbs because we didn't get enough healthy fats, or we weren't digesting our protein, mm-hmm. right? So we dial in sugar impact plate, start journaling, and I start shifting from high sugar impact foods to medium sugar impact foods. So we're trying to work you down, because if someone's a sugar burner where they're having to eat every couple hours, their blood sugar is elevated maybe due to stress, you can't just take that away and just say, we're going to eat every 6 hours and you're going to take low sugar impact, because they'll crash. It won't work. So we go through this for a week or two, depending on where someone started with the quiz, and then we go into a transition cycle. And this is so critical, and I didn't see anyone do this, where we go all low sugar impact, but now you're prepared for it. You're, again, eating by the sugar impact plate. You've now stretched your meal times. And we have strategies in there if you've got cravings, anything's going on. But I take fructose down to nearly zero, and that's critical, because the more fructose you eat, the better you get at transporting fructose. And when you take it down, a couple things happen, and this is what I wanted to prove. I took 700 people through this program, and I took the most diehard sugar addicts around. These were the people who had failed at other programs. They couldn't get rid of their sugar, their sweet tooth. And I, you know, sweet tooths are happening either because of your genetics, or you're eating sweet, and when you eat sweet, you want more sweet, or because of stress. But I knew that no matter what, we could fix this, and we could help people reclaim their sugar sensitivity, get back, you know, that appreciation of natural sweetness, not overly sweet food and like savory and spicy. So for 2 weeks, fructose is gone. You lose the ability to transport fructose well. And in 2 weeks, the average person lost 10 pounds and dropped a couple inches off their waist, but the bigger thing they lost was their sweet tooth. And we went into the next cycle, which is so critical, where we went back and we started to incorporate some medium sugar impact foods in, because some have a place in a healthy diet, like some of the different fruit choices and sweet potatoes and things like that. And we track how you feel. How's your energy? How's your mood? How's your focus? And then we try a high sugar impact food, and I have people watch how they feel. Did it trigger cravings? Did it drop your energy? And what happened with that is people told me over and over again, they go, you know what, sweet food just tastes gross now. I don't crave it. It doesn't make me feel good. So, you know, by giving their body a break, basically taking 2 weeks where they really detoxed and they could connect the dots now between how they feel and what they're eating, it's a total shift that's so empowering, because all of a sudden you're going, oh, I don't feel good when I eat this. You know, people ask me if I have a cheat day, and I go, you know, I don't cheat because I don't feel good when I eat that. It just makes me, it's funny because it crashes my energy, it usually breaks my face out, and then I want more of it. Like, go figure, you know? And it's like, I don't want to live that way. So if I just don't eat it, it's a non-issue. So then it's like it gives someone a time to see that, and all of a sudden they're free. Those cravings that have controlled them for so long are gone. Their energy is nice and stable. Their mood is great, right? And I always say people come in because they want to lose weight, but they stay because they like the way they feel. They like the energy. They like their mood. You know, people around them like them better.
Yes, so. We don't want to just look good. We want to feel good too.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, if you want to just look good, go to the plastic surgeon. Right? I mean, you know, go buy a bunch of Spanx, go to the plastic surgeon and the cosmetic counter, and, you know, that's not what we do here. It's like you want to look good because it came from within. That's a whole different ball game, right? You know?
Well, it's a very...
And I was kidding about the plastic surgeon, of course.
No,
but.
Of course. It's a very interesting approach, and I think it's so great that you end up with not wanting sweet stuff. And if you do have something sweet, it just tastes terrible, way too sweet.
Yes, isn't that awesome? I mean,
really,
how liberating, you know? And I keep hearing that again and again, that sweet stuff just tastes gross. I know how it is with me. I'm like, oh, that just it's icky. All of a sudden you realize where these things, how bad they make you feel. It's just great.
Right. Now, with this program, how quickly do you see changes? You talked about these 700 people. How quickly did they see changes?
Well, that part of it was over 2 weeks, so
okay.
It really was a two week taper cycle, and that was when we saw that the average person lost 9.7 pounds in 2 weeks. But again, that wasn't what I was setting out to prove. I wanted to prove you could get rid of your sweet tooth. That's what I wanted to see.
That's powerful.
I believed you could. I wanted to see that you could, and that's what happened. I know, because you know what? If you got rid of your sweet tooth, then you're done. Then it's non-issue anymore. That's a whole different deal.
It is, yeah. Then it's just, yeah, it's a non-issue. You don't even think about it.
Right, Now you don't have to, it's like not the every day you're white knuckling. You know, this idea of willpower is just ridiculous. Like, we weren't put here to have willpower. So you've got to give yourself a fighting chance, right?
Yeah, I agree. I always say, you know, we know sugar's bad, but if we're having to use willpower and we're feeling deprived, it's going to get the better of us. So
yeah,
if
then
we
you're
can
going
to
feel bad.
Yeah,
you
can
know?
Use something like this to change our biochemistry and learn how we can actually really feel. That's just very powerful.
Yes.
This has been fantastic. Now, you mentioned one thing that I just wanted to ask, because I remember reading this, and you talked about developing this desire for naturally sweet things, and I remember you mentioning vanilla.
I look at some of the low-sugar impact sweeteners that I let people use. So I let them use erythritol and stevia and xylitol and monk fruit, but I still would rather you didn't use them because they're still sweet. I love the natural sweetness of things that actually do good stuff for you, like cinnamon and vanilla. I mean,
mm-hmm.
You look at vanilla, and it can raise serotonin, and it's sweet. So it's a double win. And you look at cinnamon, and cinnamon's got this great sweetness, and it balances blood sugar.
Love it.
So to me, those are the two best things you can use to sweeten things. And when you stop eating these overly sweetened foods, whether it's artificial sweeteners or it's fructose, and you take those 2 weeks without fructose and your body just goes, whoomp. I mean, it's like a cleanse. And then all of a sudden you start to taste things. It's like your taste buds just came back to life, right? Because they got dull. They were at a rock concert with loud music and they just got dull. It's the same thing where you come out and your ears are ringing and you can't hear anything. Same thing with your taste buds when they get hit every day with this hyper sweet crap. You take that out, your taste buds come back to life, and cinnamon and vanilla, like, burst on your tongue. It's awesome.
Love it. I also find coconut to be naturally sweet, and that could be an option, too. And then licorice. I love licorice tea. And that's not licorice candy. A lot of people get excited when you say licorice. They think you're meaning the licorice candy. But licorice as a tea is great, and it's good for your adrenals and your hormones. And
almonds are naturally sweet. All these
yes.
things actually are. We just don't taste them anymore.
Right? Great. Oh, this has been so fantastic. Any other gems that I have forgotten to ask you about?
Well, I think the biggest thing, it's like, how do you have success on a program? And the most important thing that this all comes down to is hearing this and going, you know what? I'm hearing different things than what I've heard before, or wow, maybe sugar is sneaking in, and then deciding, okay, so I'm going to do this. What will happen if I do this? Because I think we've always got to connect this to a bigger thing out there. You know, if you went through this and all of a sudden you had great steady sustained energy and a great mood and you lost weight, so what? What does that then allow you to do in your life? And you connect to that so that it makes it easy for you to go through the process, because there's a big driving force out there helping take you through. And then get yourself an accountability partner, a support partner, and journal and do it together, you know, and even play a game or have a contest. That's what we do in our groups, is we have contests, you know. So we have everybody on board doing that. But, you know, I look at this and I go, if you don't do it now, when? And when I started to look at sugar, and honestly, I think sugar is the number one biggest problem we have. It is our healthcare crisis. You look at, $150 billion, I think, right now being spent because of just obesity alone. And sugar is the driving force behind it. Sugar is the driving problem we have. And even if you think you're doing everything right, I'm willing to bet, just like it was with me, it is sneaking into places that you go, oh, my gosh, I'm putting the dried tomatoes into that. I haven't been as careful with my marinara sauces, making sure they don't have added sugars. Maybe I've been overdoing on tomato paste. Maybe I'm using balsamic vinegar. All these things where it's sneaking in that you could be pulling it out that could help all of these different issues. And then once they do, then all of a sudden, this is what I love the most, Trudy, is all of a sudden you become a role model for other people to see what's possible. So you start having such a massive positive impact purely by being the best person you can be for yourself.
Love it. That's beautiful. Well, this has been so great. And we talked about the importance of breakfast and starting out at the beginning of the day. And I know you've got your wonderful Virgin Diet Shake recipe book as a giveaway. Is there anything you want to mention about that? And what we'll do is actually share the link on the replay page so folks can come and get this great Virgin Diet Shake recipe book.
Awesome. So, yeah, it's the Virgin Diet and Sugar Impact Diet Shake Recipe Smoothie Book, and we created it. It's some of my recipes and then some of our favorite recipes from our we do these group challenges, so we always have people send in recipes. So, amazing recipes, but the number one thing that I've been doing for 20 years and that I have people do both on the Virgin Diet Group Challenges and the Sugar Impact Diet Sugar Solution Group Challenges is start the day with a shake. And it is just the research shows people who do that tend to lose more weight and keep it off. But I think just in terms of setting the tone for the day, when you start out with great bioavailable protein and healthy fats from, say, coconut milk or almond milk, and I put avocado in mine too, and some low-impact carbs and loads of fiber. I like to throw in some chia seeds. It just, I mean, mine keeps me full literally for hours. I always have stable blood sugar. You know, most people, when you look at it, Trudy, they start the day with dessert. They have the latte and the muffin. They have the cupcakes or the, I always say the muffin's the cupcake, but they have the ice cream cones we were talking about. And that just starts your day going downhill from the start. So a shake is one of the easiest ways to start the day. It's like your day's good day insurance by starting the day with a shake. So, yes, I'm giving my favorite smoothie guide. I think there's now over 50 smoothie recipes in there, and they're all Virgin Diet, Sugar Impact Diet approved, and awesome, delicious.
Fabulous. Thank you so much for doing that. This has been really great. It's been an absolute honor to have you on the Anxiety Summit and to interview you. And I wish you so much success with this new book and all the other books that I know you're going to write.
I don't know. Don't talk about that right now.
Well,
no one's allowed to talk about writing any more books, although we will have the Sugar Impact Diet Cookbook coming out in May. That's already written.
Great.
But, yeah, we're not talking about more books at this point.
Well, you're doing such a great job, and you're on a mission, and it's really great. I just commend you for everything that you're doing.
Thank you.
Thanks, JJ. And thank you, everyone, for joining the Anxiety Summit Season 2. This was the amazing Sugar Impact Diet interview with JJ Virgin, author of the new Sugar Impact Diet book. And now you know the huge impact that sugar can have on so many areas. And here to zero cravings and enjoying naturally sweet things. Thanks very much again, JJ, and be sure to tune in to our other great interviews. This is Trudy Scott signing off.